For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. For the record, 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 for the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
Welcome to The Clink, coming to you live from the Mount Woodgie Studios here in Currumbin on the Gold Coast. Today we have one of the most exciting surfers on the planet. He's been at the top, he went back to the bottom, and he's back on top again with an amazing story of redemption. Dean Dingo Morrison, mate, welcome to The Clink.
Thanks for having me, mate. Stoked.
Dingy, I know that you're a busy man, and I just want to once say thank you. It makes me very proud to sit down with you. And I think what people will hear in your story would be absolutely inspirational to where you are today and who you are and the path you've walked. For those that don't know who Dean Morrison is, and we have, you know, thousands of listeners out there that may not.
I grew up surfing around Coolangatta.
Yep.
From a really young age. I grew up with Mick Fanning and Joel Parkinson, and that's how people kind of recognise us as a group.
Or now multiple world champions.
Yeah, yeah, or now, you know, yeah, world champions. And so people, I guess, attracted to that story of how we grew up and become on tour and achieving goals.
Going back to you as a young fella, what was it like? Was mum and dad there? Was it a good family environment, or was it more sort of...
There was a lot of turmoil in my family. So growing up and then getting older and trying to understand it, like the way that it had shaped me. And I guess that's a huge journey for anyone, is kind of wonder, like seeing the way that they act. But it, you know, it becomes such a driving force for me that I was able to just put all my energy into becoming a surfer, and just got so obsessed with that because of the stuff that I was trying to get away from.
In the home environment?
In the home environment. So the kind of the things that had happened as a child.
Yep.
It was such a driving force to move in something I really loved, was surfing, and something that I could just get away from everything.
We talk often on The Clink about people who have survived through traumas, whether it be through childhood trauma or adult trauma and things like this. And I find that just about all our guests have a safe place, a place that gets them to a point in their mindset and makes them feel good. I myself understand that completely, growing up in a very volatile environment, a lot of alcohol, there was violence, the sort of things that, you know, you shouldn't have to grow up around as a child. Was the beach that place for you to run to feel, you know, feel that you were free, didn't have to deal with any of the dramas at home?
Definitely. You know, that was, I would pack a lunch in the morning and it would give me a vision. Like, I had a vision of being one of the best surfers in the world.
So you visualised this as a young man?
Yeah, I visualised this. So I used to surf and pretend that I was going for world titles and you know, okay, there's 5 minutes to go, let's do this and that. And, you know, and it got me out of a situation that was really volatile, and I didn't know what was going to happen, to, okay, I have control over this. I can actually have a vision of my destiny and where I want to go, rather than where I am at this point in time. And, you know, there was really good times, but there were some times when I didn't know why it was happening.
And how old were you?
This kind of happened all through my childhood.
Right, okay.
So until, you know, throughout, you know, when I was young and things like that, it really, you know, there was really hard situations. I was molested at a young age.
So you, like, myself and Russell and a few other of us that have been here, we're survivors of sexual abuse.
Yeah, so
wow,
going through that and then feeling the shame and just feeling unworthy and the anger and understanding that this is you know, this trauma that has happened is kind of, you know, there's, it drove me to be obsessed with surfing, but it never allowed me to be present with where I was at. So that, you know, as I'm getting older and, you know, I realize that it triggered me for drugs and alcohol.
Yep. Guys, this is quite powerful. And I can't thank you enough for putting yourself out there and being vulnerable by opening up like this.
So it just with me understanding and seeing that okay, well, you know, I had to go back and get to the root of you know, what my why I was doing, you know, what my defaults were in my personality, and it was just about being truthful. And it comes to that. Okay, well, how do I stop that? Because I want to be the best version of myself. I want my son to grow up and not have any baggage of what was mine.
Yes.
Without realizing it.
Yep.
So that's the journey I've been on, and it's about being truthful with myself. And it's only since this year that I've been able to open up to people about it and actually go, well, you know, this has happened. But not to, you know, just to understand and just to talk about it, because when you're honest with yourself and with other people, you allow other people to be honest, and they can take from your journey, and you guys can share whatever's going on within that space.
You know, back then I was just wearing a mask. I was this person, but just a little boy, scared and hurt underneath that skin of that man. And it wasn't until I allowed that young boy to come out and voice, relive, go through, process it, and move forward from it that I'm a better dad, a better partner, a better human all way around. I can't help but think that you took a lot of that with you, though, and like you say, you know, put it into your surfing. And now I do get a complete picture of why you have been so driven.
Mm, yeah, and then it gets to a point when other people want to get to know you. And so then that's a whole different...
Are you talking more like relationships and commitment and stuff like that?
Well, even just being in a spotlight
yep.
for me. So that's what I was talking about. And then feeling that you're not good enough in that light. So I always shied away from people getting to know me, whereas, you know, it's such a beautiful thing that people are inspired by you and look at you at your journey. And go, oh, wow, you know, that's Dean Morrison. But I never, ever took that on and was never comfortable with it. So it was hard for me to accept that and be proud of that. It's just about being honest and seeing that for what it was. And now I can be grateful for the life that I live. I have lived such an amazing life. I have so many amazing people around me. It's, you know, it's just understanding the journey. And, you know, like the triggers for me with that, and not resorting to violence, not resorting to trying to control people, because I had no control over that situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we are in a volatile situation like that, then obviously we're going to grow up and, you know, people aren't always going to understand us, because, you know, this we will react from that trauma situation that actually happened to us back then. So it's understanding that, and it's just about getting honest with myself and seeing love and light over fear.
Fear, okay. I'd love to get, you know, as much of the Dean Morrison story as I can, because there's so many parts of your life, you know, from like a young fella that's lived through trauma to then being supported and living with somebody who was a great role model for you to then, you know, becoming one of the best in the world at a junior level, yeah. to then being the best in the world. And then, you know, you talk about fear. You confronted some of the most craziest waves that I know that anybody has seen on this planet.
He's got a passion for surfing that's unparalleled. You know, I mean, I made a prediction that by the time Dean Morrison's 40 years of age, he'll have surfed more barrels than any other human being ever in the history of the Earth.
I would challenge anyone in the world to say that they've been in the tube longer than Dean Morrison.
You've experienced exactly the same. I mean, what was it like coming through as a junior, pretty well being, I guess, unsupported from mum and dad. There was issues, like you said, so you've moved on.
Like, Rab was such an inspirational person in my life.
And Rab is, for those that don't know,
Wayne Rabbit Bartholomew. He was a 1978 world champion.
He was.
So he took me under his wing I was about 11 years old, 12 years old.
Right.
And he was planting these seeds in my head and go, you know, first time I met him, I said, look, I want to be world champion surfer. He goes, well, mate, you know, it's a long road, but, you know, you can achieve it, you're young. And you just planted these seeds, like, this is what you got to do. So, you know, one of them was you got to surf 18 times a week. So I'd surf before school, after school, and then four times on the weekends.
18 times. It doesn't sound much, does it? But when you put it in perspective, it's a lot of surfing in a week.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was. And it kept me driven to a goal. And it made me achieve, and I knew what hard work was, and I knew that I didn't want to go down the other road of, you know, smoking and drinking and pulling bongs and things like
which
that.
Which was how it was, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
like, just what the boys are doing, have a sesh, have a surf, and
yeah,
a few beers.
10, 11 years old, you know, my mates are already pulling bongs and that.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah. But, you know, having a vision of what I wanted to do kept me away from that because, you know, I grew up with a lot of that in the family, and I could see that it wasn't going to allow me to be my best self.
But it was an era where it was just, that's what you did, wasn't it? It was just part of the lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah, it was. And so it's all about, you know, learning from it. And, you know, I was sitting at the AFL the other day, and, you know, I was sitting with Darren Lockyer. And,
wow.
You know, I was just like, oh, so, you know, what would you think in a big game like this at halftime? He's like, mate, it's just another game.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what about when you made a mistake? Because I'm the king of, if I make a mistake, I'm dwelling on that shit.
Yep,
you
know? Okay.
I can fucking siphon it and fucking go over it and just, you know, and then it just, I'm not present. And
just manifest the whole fucking...
I'm going through rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing good.
It's wasteful shit that's just consuming you.
Yeah, nothing good's going to come of it.
Yeah.
You know? I've been an absolute black belt at that. But it's seeing that for what it is. I actually have a choice. What Darren Lockyer was saying, that it's done. You know, that's...
Move forward.
There's nothing I can, you know, I can't control what I done yesterday. I can actually control what I do today and tomorrow.
That, just on what you're talking about there, so we were watching the grand final from home. My young son, Keishan's had his first year of rugby league this year. He's 10. And he asked me a very relatable question to what you're talking about. There was a mistake in the game by a Penrith player, and it was very costing at the time of the changeover of the ball. They had the momentum the second half. It was a simple play, and the ball was gone. They lost the ball. And Keishan said to me, Dad, how would he feel? You know, what does he do? A grand final, you know, he's just dropped the ball. Like, he's a 10-year-old trying to process the fact that this guy's could have cost his team a set of six that was definitely on a roll to possibly score and, you know, bring the game to even. And I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, watch his hand. And sure as hell, his hand went up. He took it. He owned it. He processed it and fucked it off.
Yeah.
And I right there said to my son, I said, see what he's just done? He no longer, he will not think about that and own that now. The next play is what matters.
Yep.
And I think that's really powerful what you're saying.
Yeah, and you know what he also said too was, you know, about his preparation. So everything leading up to that game and his preparation is already done.
Okay.
So, you know, so he's gone on that journey of, okay, I've done everything I can and now I'm here. So I got to let that go.
How can you relate to that in your days of surfing at the absolute best of the best in the world on the world stage? And man, how many, can I ask you, how many finals did you make?
Mate, I didn't make that many finals. I only made two. Like,
really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It seemed like you were always
like
it was always about Dean Morrison.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's because Mick and Joel were always saying.
But it was exciting. But how did you find that, you know, relating that back to your whole life? Because your whole life you've competed.
Yeah. Well, I guess in that situation, I could see that the times that I've I've dwelled on, you know, okay, someone else has got a good wave. All right, well, fuck, I don't feel good enough. Fuck, it's over, you know. But
like, were there times there where you still had 5 or 6 minutes in the heat and there might have been a lull or just something didn't go right for you and you were like, fuck it, I'm beaten? Or did you just go, okay, done, fucked up, shit waves, whatever, I'm looking, there's a break, there's a peak, something's happening, I'm moving, I'm on.
Yep.
You know, where did that work for you?
When I would keep it simple, I just need another wave. But when I would start getting too much in my head and thinking about the outcome and what I had to do, and it would get all too much and I'd get flustered, and by the time I'd get up on a wave, I would be just so in my head that the situation was already passed.
It's crazy because it is known, and not pissing in your pocket, you're one of the most highly regarded competitive surfers that were ever on tour.
Yeah.
It didn't matter the size, it didn't matter the location, mm-hmm. You turned up, and you turned up with fire in your belly.
Yeah, and I think I was always better when I felt like I was behind the eight ball. Like if I was the underdog. Yeah, when I was against someone like Andy or Kelly, and it was in their conditions, because it narrowed it down to, I know exactly what I need to do. And there's no ifs or buts. Like, I know that I need to be on the best waves and surf them as best as I can. I know that I can't outsurf these guys, but if I...
When you say I can't outsurf these guys, and mm-hmm. I want to just touch on that because that's a really powerful mental block.
Yep.
You know, like today we see a lot of psychology behind all athletes, you know, and the one thing is, like you did as a young person, you visualize to be a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing you can do as an athlete is see it before you do it.
Yep.
You just said then that basically that just tells me you beat yourself.
Yeah.
Was that how it was when you come up against Andy Irons and Kelly Slater? Or was it, I can beat these guys?
It was, I knew what I had to do within that 30 minutes. And yep. The result is going to be from how well I do what I can do in my control.
The best of your ability.
The best of my ability. And it was as simple as that. I would always just surf to the last second. Even if I was ahead, I wouldn't think I was ahead.
So technically, you can't give any more to the judges personally than what you've given.
Yep.
And it's obviously left to the numbers at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? And it's about being honest. You know, like Andy and Kelly, they are the best surfers in the world and the best surfers that have ever been on a surfboard. Yeah. So how, like, if I go out there and think that I'm a better surfer than them and can get away with catching as good as waves as them and not beating them, then it's not going to happen.
I think you come through in an era where, you know, whichever way you look at it, it was an extremely powerful 10 years of surfing, surfers, competitiveness, waves, like... Mate, I just sit back and blows my mind, you know, and we'll get into it a little bit down the track. And I had the pleasure of seeing you win a particular event and put a flag over the back of your shoulder. And to this day, I know you put the post. I'm like, yeah, I'll put your hand over. That's me. You just see a little bit of me, and I'm like, fuck, how cool was that, you know? But I got to feel that euphoric moment and see you get lifted from the water and go back to your junior days and you know, you're trying to qualify for the QS.
Yep.
Let's talk about it, because that to me is the biggest head fuck of all, surely.
Qualify. You know what? It all happened so quick. Like, I went from winning the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australian, and world title. And then after that happened, it was just like, I was just on, it just kind of it catapulted. I think I'd done the QS the next year, and without even kind of thinking about it too much, I was right there. I was already in striking distance. Like, I was like, whoa. And I actually didn't even go to Brazil.
So how long were you on the QS before you qualified?
The year that I wanted to qualify, I qualified.
Wow.
Yeah, so Mick and Joel, it just kind of all happened. Like, I actually didn't even know what I needed at events and stuff. Like,
so you just turned up there with a vision and just surfed?
Yeah, and I just surfed, and I'd be okay. That's when the tour was 44 guys. Yeah. So, they had like 6 stars and things like that. And then I would make round before the quarters. I'm like, it's okay. And like, geez, that's a good result. I'm like, really?
And if we can just, for the listeners out there that don't understand surfing, the round of the top 44 had a cutoff, didn't it? And what was it again? Was it the last 15 or 12?
Was it 16?
It was top 15, top 16.
I think 28 stayed on.
That's right.
And then 16 new guys come.
That's right. And yeah. And that was predominantly at the end of the season back then, wasn't it? The rollover of each year.
Yes, so it was.
I know later we've come to a change since then, but back then was it like that?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that was it. So it's like two tours. Like it's like the same as qualifying for the PGA Tour, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's like, you know, the qualifying series to get onto the World Championship Tour, and then there's 44 guys at the time in that tour, and then they're there for the whole year.
Okay. And from a sponsor's point of view, things were good?
Yeah, things were really good. Like, I think we all started signing pretty big contracts in school and things like that.
So you're quite young, and the world's basically at your feet now. The doors are opening.
Yeah, quite. You know, we're pretty young, and you know, signing at the time,
big
more money than I think I signed an 80 grand contract. You know, just off my main sponsor for a 2-year deal.
Wow.
And I think Mick signed one for, 99 grand for 3 years.
Wow.
So it was all like, you know, we as surfers, we, you know, usually you don't come from much. And so having that kind of money, you spend most of it on travel, but it was cool. You know, we started driving around cars and things like that. And, you know, nothing to, you know, just spend 4 or 5 grand on a car at the time.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, we had some freedom and we had a goal that we were driven to.
How did you feel traveling the world at a young age? You know, being out there and literally not having to be consumed about what was going on back home.
Mm.
But your mind just would have opened up to such beautiful things and a wow in life that most will never experience.
Yeah. Well, it was all about getting to the beach. You know,
just, fuck the travel.
Yeah. Well, how good are the waves here? You know, I just want to surf good waves.
How did you travel? Because man, you guys, you'd sit on flights for so long on stages and get like 2, 3, 4 flights sometimes, eh?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it was just Rab would tell me, okay, so you go to, you know, fly to London, Paris to Gaulle, you know, and then you got to get to Ul, and then okay, so you got to get on the train that says Sud-Oost.
Oh, so there's a train as well.
There's a train. So I was like, okay, and he's like, mate, and you're just drilling into me. You got Sud-Oost. You got to get on that train.
Sud-Oost.
I did not speak the language. You not speak French. I was like, okay. I got there and just things like that, and I just do it by myself. Rocking up to meetings like that was you had people there to guide you on the path. And
so was it just more of the Aussie contingent supporting each other and you know, guiding the next generation?
Yeah, it was. And I think at the time there was a huge push from the American side with Kelly dominating and Dorian and all them guys. And then, you know, the Aussies kind of took a stand and, it paid off.
Oh, absolutely. And how many world champions and successes in surfing?
It's, you know, finding their moments and seeing what you're made of. And doing your best in that situation, you know, and you come up short, and you know that's okay. But you gave it a go, and you found something inside yourself that you can relate to, and go, well, you know what, I can actually be a little bit better person the next time. And so I think that's what it's all about, is being accountable and looking at yourself and go, you know what, Dean, I can just be just a little bit better. You know, let's try to approach it from a different angle. And you know, that's how you learn.
So, Dean Morrison's qualified. He hits the CT as we knew it back then.
Yep. I think I just moved out of Rab's unit, you know, that he
took down his How old were you at this stage when you qualified?
So, I think I was 20.
20.
Yep. I was 20 when I qualified. And, you know, I just had moved out of Rab's about a year before. It's about, you know, I was pretty content with just them with Rab for the rest of my life.
Yep.
You know, because we had a cool unit there at Kira. And
is Rab more like a father figure to you, someone you forever role model?
Yeah, he has been. And
I know who he is. And you know, I've got to say, guys, he's just an absolutely beautiful man with a wealth of knowledge. And he's, I don't know how he's going to go with his political view, but Rabs, if you're listening, which I'm sure you probably will at some stage, mate, go for it, rip in.
for sure. So, he, I, for planting them seeds, you know, I'm forever grateful for that.
Do you think if Rab hadn't have been there, life would have been a lot different for Dean Morrison?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think, you know, just having them seeds planted on the journey allowed me to go from one place to another and to better myself within surfing. And that kind of transpires into everything I was doing at the time.
What was it like coming up, realizing that I'm sure you had your idols growing up on tour at that stage?
Yep.
You're side by side, you're going to be competing against these men that you've had pictures on the wall. I've watched their thousands of times, their videos, their styles, everything about them.
Yeah.
How does a man, you know, that's not had the best start, to no fault of his own, and here you are, like, living the dream, so to speak.
Yeah. I think that first year on tour, I was really, really stiff. Like,
Were you scared?
I was really scared.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't feel good enough. I was like, what am I doing here? Like, these guys are everyone that I've looked up to. Like, how, you know, and then I'd win heats. Like, I'd get the best score in the round or the best score of the event. And, but I was just surfing so stiff. And, you know, Parker would actually, you know, as good mates do, you know, you don't need too many enemies when you've got best mates.
especially like Parker. Mate, the banter between you guys over the years, you know, like I had Jay Phillips, my brother-in-law, you know, say to me, man, you need to get Shagger on there and have a chat about, you know, the stories of you guys, because he obviously got to share a bit of that time, and just the whole banter and the good times, and you'd fill a book.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, you know, it was laughs, and I always look up the way Joel is. Like, he's like a Zen master.
Yeah,
you know,
beautiful man.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he never ever overthinks anything, whereas I was the exact opposite. I was overthink everything. I'd be up all night thinking about what was going to happen the next day. By the time I got to my heat, I was so exhausted. That
did you have anxiety? Do you feel?
Like yeah. I mean, there was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of, you know, not feeling worthy enough of, you know, what am I doing here? And, you know, there's just all the stuff that you can sabotage yourself with, I was doing it.
Yep.
You know, and it's, to me, it was just natural. You know, but now I look back on it and, the relationship I have now with myself, it's, you know, it's...
Do you love who you are today?
Yeah, I love who I am. Yeah. You know,
that's really powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, and I never had that, but it's just, you know, the self-talk I have with myself, you know, the upkeep I keep, you know, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't get into relationships that are
toxic. Yeah.
You know,
not a good, a positive for both parties.
Yeah. Or trying to fix someone else.
Yeah.
You know, so with that understanding of myself is all because I have support around me. You know, I have the right people there. I have people guiding me in the right direction, you know, and I can call up someone and go, hey man, you know, I'm going through this, I trust them enough to know that they're going to give me the right advice. And it's always the same advice that I get. It always comes back to love and light. For me, what's happened, you know, I took a journey of going, I had a drug and alcohol problem. I realized that. So I went to rehab. I went on that journey. It was just one-on-one, you know, it was just understanding it and bringing it back to what it was that triggered that.
You're traveling the world. There must have been, and I don't want names, but that's not what we're about here, but there must have been a lot of drugs and alcohol. You know, you are the kings of the world traveling around. People just adore you. People idolize you.
Everyone was really focused, you know, within the event. And then when the event was over, you know, if one of the boys won, then we'd catch up and celebrate.
Yeah, green light, let's go.
Yeah, but at that level, there's not, you know, everyone's pretty focused. Like, it kind of separates. You know, there's,
okay.
I think maybe earlier, you know, in the years before, you know.
Yeah. They went mad. Yep.
There was, I mean, you know, there were exceptions. Like, we all did have fun.
Yep.
Like, I'll always tell the truth and. Yeah, like, you know, I won't
shoot. Been a couple of cookers.
Yeah, there was a couple of cookers.
Like, even Hawaii, like, end of year. I mean, like, I try to sort of give people a bit of a picture in our stories of each person that comes on as a guest. And, you know, putting someone's visuals into how it was, you know, like what a stage, you know, you're surfing basically waves that at any time could kill you. There's no two ways about it. One of the most dangerous spots, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what I loved about it, you know, about pushing myself, about, you know, in them situations where you're really uncomfortable and you don't want to be there, but then coming through it and go, well, you know what, I actually went past where I thought I could. And that's why I love surfing.
You believed you could win events?
I wouldn't rock up and you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure.
I'm glad I said it. That's a really, you know, I'm looking at Dean's face at the moment, and yeah, I can see that that's something that really sort of makes you ponder a bit, doesn't it, mate?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, because, well, you know, so.
Because you know your ability.
Yeah.
You win, like you said, you're winning heats, you're out there, you know that you can knock this. Mm. You know, you're in there. You're in the top 44. In fact, you're in the top 10 for how many years?
Yeah, I made the top 10 three times.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to maintain and surf competitively every time to be able to continue to do that, correct?
Yeah. And it's just about being the best competitor you can and always kind of, you know, not asking yourself too many questions because it's not going to work out all the time.
Yeah,
you know, so you really have to back yourself, and you're the only one out in the water by yourself. Like, but then you got to be able to prepare for the situations you're in as well.
How many events did you win?
I won one,
and the one being at home.
Yep, the one.
One of the most prestigious events, the start of the year.
Yep.
In a place that brought so much joy to your life.
Yes.
And that you would, as a child, if you could. If Dean Morrison, that I was there getting chaired out of the water, that just won the Quicksilver Pro, was there a little boy, Dean Morrison, looking up at him going, you did it?
Yeah, it was.
You know what I mean? Put it in perspective and.
Yeah, I was just able to surf the way that I wanted to that day.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and it was great to be able to feel that and experience it because, you know, the year before I was so out of sorts. So I didn't surf like I wanted. I was, you know, I didn't think I was good enough. And, you know, at the end of the year, I was off tour. And then I got a wild card back on tour. And so I just went, you know what? I think I got like 30th. I went, you know what? From where you've come from and what's happened and where you are now, 30th in the world is, you know, that's amazing.
It is.
You know, and I went, yeah. You know, I had a little cry after I fell off. And then I just kind of backed myself and, you know, you're good enough, you'll get back there. And then I got a wild card and then I was into the first event of the year. And then I won it. And then there was a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, about being number one in the world.
Yeah,
about,
the pressure was on. That's it.
But I remember Andy calling me and goes, well, dude, your stats just went up, buddy. And I was like, oh, you know, and Andy was, you know, he was such a... Yeah, I did. I had such a great friendship with him.
God bless him not being here today with us. But, yeah. You know, how was that for you?
He was such a competitor, you know, and I was competing against him. So it was, you know, we'd be on boat trips together and stuff. And he was just doing the most amazing surfing that I've ever seen. And but he was raw, man. He was like, you know, it was Andy. And, you know, I look back on their moments and I'm just so grateful. And I laugh at situations, you know, and it's... Just to share moments and then just see the side of him that's so loving and caring. You know, when I went through some stuff in my life, he was just there. He'd come around and just, you know, he'd be there on the doorstep every morning. Dingo, how you doing, mate? Like, yeah, I'm doing good. He goes, you got to use this to your advantage. You got to, you know, at the time I didn't know how to, you know, use that energy and focus it on something. It was just like I was dwelling. So, you know, now when I go through something, I can use it to better myself.
Do you still hear, even though Andy has now left us and passed on,
yep.
Do you still hear those words in your mind at times when there's certain situations and that him talking to you?
Yeah, I just being around him and how he was and you know, he was so honest about his demons and open.
Mate, bipolar and mental health and drugs and all that sort of shit was just so shunned upon.
Yeah.
And no one wanted to know about it. You were just a too hard basket.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy would have known that that's what you do for a mate.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're down. And it would have been purely only because in his head, that's how he lived.
When I was going through that, we connected on such a level that I felt safe. And I was like, you know, he was there for me. And yeah. He was like a brother. So, and when you're in them situations, when you feel like ending it, you know, they're, when people are like that with you, you really support and you know, kind of lean on them at them times.
When you talk about ending it, what was it like falling off tour, you know, and I, quote me if I'm wrong, but I do remember you literally just going into a whole heap.
Yeah, and it was... Just,
your mental health was... You were quite erratic.
Yeah.
Just always up for a good time.
Yep.
Like, I remember coming to, you know, your house that you just bought at the back of Cooley there, and, mate, it was just always parties and people jumping off the roof into the pool, and
it was
dinghies.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
the party house, you know? What?
Yeah, and...
Take us through that time.
Mate, I lost the will, you know. I lost me trying to be myself, be my best.
Because had you lost your sponsor at that stage too? Like, was
no, they were pretty good. They hung in there, and you
that
know,
was Oakley at the time, was it?
No. So when I fell off tour, I was Volcom. They were really good. They were really supportive, and I just wanted to chase good waves. But I was just, you know, I was defeated. I was, you know, they were being taken out of my sails, so to speak. I was, you know, I was living moment to moment.
You think that was more just from the young boy's dream of being the world champion and not hitting that pinnacle, and then it's just stopped?
Yes. One of the factors would be for sure. You know, I think when you get to that age, when you're 29, 30, what I realised was that what I'm doing isn't working, you know. But I didn't... I wasn't at the time. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know that the situation from when I was younger, from the abuse, that I had to deal with it.
That hurt and pain was so suppressed.
Yes.
That you were acting out because of that without even realizing that this is you masking your true pain.
Yeah. The journey I went on was, you know, the support I had was partying. You know, that's where I got my...
Well, everyone was always around you.
Yeah. And I you know, and it just, you know, partying and girls is fucking the road I went
down.
Good
times.
Yeah. You know,
it's a win-win, especially when you can say, see ya.
Yeah.
but then you'd shut that door,
mm-hmm.
and then it's just you, your mind.
Yes.
Lack of sleep.
Yep.
The drugs, the alcohol.
Yep.
And it ain't fucking good.
No, it's not. And I think that's where... You know, it went on for 10 years. And it was, you know, there was just, I was trying to fill a gap with whatever it was. You know, whether it was...
And you did get married, if I can bring that up, in that time? You found a partner and...
Yeah, I found a partner. I was on a, you know, I was a back end of an 8-day bender. That one went real well.
Wow. I do.
You know, but that's... You know.
Oh, I love you. We're going to spend the rest of our life together.
You know, we had a kid together, and, you know, that was the best time of my life. But, you know, that relationship ended, obviously. You know, there wasn't much of a foundation there. But you know what? It was, you know, that situation gave me the greatest gift, which is my son. So, So, the journey was a journey of filling that gap with whatever I could, whether it was someone or something, to put into that. And without getting honest with myself, I was just out there fucking taking drugs on the piss. You know, it wasn't every day.
No, but there was enough there to dominate your life.
Yeah, and I was always just looking for that.
Yeah.
For that situation I was in. Yeah. And, you know, I'd go from, you know, 0 to 100. Yep.
Like, his worst enemy is his own mind. He thinks way too much about it.
Has a few beers and he loves getting nude.
I mean, you steal my pardon and it'll blow your mind.
You see him out of back door, he'll blow your mind.
He gets out there and it's just blinkers on. The rest of the world just shuts down.
It's like he just goes blank to everything else is around him. All he wants is that wave and that feeling of surfing.
I mean, surfing definitely saved Dean's life.
Well, I've just always been in my own mind, own body, so
yeah,
whatever it is, you know, and I know how to overcome it.
Yep.
You know, I know that drugs, alcohol, and toxic relationships,
yes,
you know, that's really going to, for me, it's going to set it off.
It'll destroy your life.
Yep. And so it's about getting honest and go, you know what, I got to take responsibility for this shit. I got to be honest with me. And then doing the AA and NA program for me was taking the steps towards that, being honest with myself.
You talked about fear earlier, and we talk about honesty now, and I think it's relevant.
Yep.
You become this, I for those of you out there, how tall are you, Dean?
5'6" with heels on.
So a shorter statured man with balls bigger than fucking anyone I've ever met.
Yeah.
A heart massive like Farlap.
Yeah.
You weigh, mate, bugger all, but yet you become this, I can't process it. Like I get a hold down, two hold downs, and I'm like that guy that, yeah, I shit myself. I can't because of my breathing. I can't relax. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You've gone through this period of your life, the high, the low, like you said, 10 years of just having a hell time, but, you know, the times weren't always the best. You're not on tour, but you're chasing something bigger and better that most people will never ever fucking understand.
Yeah.
Big wave surfing.
Mm. Well, that was...
Why? Why? What? Where do you find that drive to now get that... Was it more... And I want to ask this because in my head I'm sitting here thinking about a man who's hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't give a fuck.
Yep.
Between you and I, and obviously, you know, we're having a very honest chat. Probably suicidal at times.
Yep. Yeah.
And here you are putting your life on the line in the most unbelievable spots in this world, surfing waves that, they're fucking huge.
Mm.
How? Why?
You know what? It was reckless. You know, I wasn't...
That's where I was heading. Was this a part of that not give a fuck period in your own? Like, I just don't care.
Yeah. I did not give a fuck. You know, I was just sabotaging myself any which way I could. You know, realizing that now. You know, I remember rocking up to a swell in Tahiti. It was a code red swell. And I was just so frantic. Like, I was like...
We're talking about Chopu?
Chopu.
Tahiti?
The biggest day ever that's been...
One of the most absolutely... Death-defying reefs.
Yeah, so me and Kobe are there, and we're going through the channel, and we're just on the ski, and I'm just freaking out, going, "Let's fucking go, let's fucking do it."
Adrenaline's pumping. Dingo's on.
I'm on, and you just turn.
Were you prepared to die there in those waves?
Oh, 100%. I was like, "Well, fuck, this is it. I'm ready to go."
Going out the way you want to go.
Yep. And I was just like, I was that fear was coming up, but I was coming at it with just reckless. Like, it was sabotaging. And, you know, Cove just turns around and goes, "Oi, chill the fuck out."
Like, it actually clicked him, made him concerned.
Yeah, he goes, "You got to chill the fuck out."
Because not much phases him.
Yeah, he goes, "You know, just fucking, you just relax."
Wow.
And I'm like, "I don't give a fuck, just get me out there." And he's like, "Let's just watch it for a bit." I was like, "No, I'm not fucking watching it." Because I was just too scared. I was just so overwhelmed.
That's still to date, I might be wrong, but it's still the biggest swell in the last, how many years that they've had there? 15 years, 20 years?
Yeah, well, it's one of the biggest ones. Yeah, like they call it Code Red because the police actually come out and stopped everyone from surfing it.
Oh, right. Is that why?
Yeah, because it was so big, the ocean was so big that they didn't allow.
So it's a duty of care, basically, a responsibility of life.
Yeah, so the Gendarmerie was out there in the lineup saying no one can surf, and then people went out.
And how does that work then? Are you arrested when you come back in? Is there a problem? Like,
yeah, no, they just allowed it and just went, "Oh, okay, well." And so I got out there, and you know, I just went, "Let's go!" And I just grabbed the rope and I didn't care. I was like, "Fuck, I'm out there!" And there was like a couple guys out, and I remember actually going out with me and Kobe on that, and it was the biggest I've ever seen the ocean in my life.
What would you call it in feet?
I mean, it was like, it was ridiculous. Like, it was like, we were looking at it and I was just like, wow. Like, it was dark, overcast. It was like something out of a horror movie. And wow. We were coming out to it, and there was this mist in the air. And just like, and you could just see it, and there was, it wasn't perfect at all. There was like...
So it wasn't a perfect cylinder wave? It was angry?
It was onshore, and it was wild. And I was just like, give me the rope. I'm fucking out there. You know, wow. Just because I was so freaked out and so scared that I didn't want to sit there and think about it too much.
Yeah, I get that.
You know? So
yeah.
I grabbed the rope, and, you know, actually, you know, Malik Joya was one of my really good friends that passed away in 2005.
Another Tahitian, sorry, yeah. Absolute lord and yeah. King of the ocean, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I didn't meet him, but from what I know of.
Yeah, he was really, he had one of the most beautiful people I've ever met.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I prayed to him and said, man, just, you know, can you watch out for me? And then my first wave, I got it, you know, I didn't even know what I was doing. My straps were so tight.
Hairs on my arms. I'm starting to stand out right now. I just, fuck, man, this is nuts.
Yeah, like, and then, you know, I just grabbed the rope, and my first wave, my straps were too tight, and I was like, I didn't even know how to ride the wave. I was like skipping down the face. Like, I had way too much weight on my back foot, and I was just skipping down the wave of like a 20-foot. I'm just going, what am I doing? And then I just, my leg just went snap. I just snapped my ankle, and I was just like, you know, I was just like, mate, get out of here, you're not ready.
Were you sucked, thrown over the fall?
Yeah, so I made as much as I could, and then I went pull off the back, and then like my straps were so tight, my ankles went snap.
Oh, wow!
And it was just, I think for me, it was just a sign that, you know, you're not ready for this. You got to, you know, yeah.
You know, that next wave could have killed you.
Yeah, and I felt that when I was surfing that day. I was like, yeah, well. You know, I actually feel like there's something's going to happen. And when Cobes actually stopped the ski and said later, he goes, man, actually, you know, I was actually really scared for you. Because he's seen how freaked out I was.
That's big words.
Yeah.
Between you two men, and I know the both of you, and I know Kobe, how he thinks. Like, for you two guys to ever pull back or just go, no, that's it.
And then, you know, it was a few years, and I actually went to a yoga camp for a month where it was just 15 hours a day of just learning spirituality and yoga. And 15
hours a day?
Yeah, 15 hours a day.
So you live and breathe it?
Lived and breathed it, and it was just about, you know, and I was able to come from a place of love for myself and for everything else that was going around me.
Were you able to go deep and start to bring forward that trauma from your childhood, the abuse and how you felt?
Yes and no. Like, I didn't go into it that deep.
So at that stage, you're still suppressing the real, what the facts were, but...
But I had found a place of forgiveness for myself in that, and a place of love and understanding and to move on.
Yep.
So, and then randomly, there was a huge swell in Tahiti. And so I got on the plane, like, I was supposed to get certified to be a yoga teacher. And the guy goes, well, if you leave today...
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, guy goes, if you leave today, you're not gonna be a yoga teacher. You know,
and was this at the very end of it still? And you'd done all the hard work?
I'd done everything. And I was like, I was like, well, man, if that's what it is, because my journey is surfing. And, you know, I have somewhere to be that I need to for my...
It's what you do.
Yeah, it's what I do.
It's who you are.
And so, you know, the last time I'd been back to Tahiti was that swell, that Code Red swell. And then I seen this swell on the map, and it was just as big but a lot better. So I went, well, I'm going. And he goes, well, you know, you're not going to get your certified yoga teacher. I went, well, mate, we probably both know I'm not going to be the best yoga teacher. You know? So
and
I went home. I went home, you know.
But a great experience at the same time, right? You learn a lot from it.
And it's what I needed at the time.
Have you used any of it within your life today?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was valuable.
Yeah, it was really valuable. And so I went to Tahiti for this swell, and, you know, it was huge. And I honestly had the best 5 days surf of my life. It was that swell that Cole Rothman got that massive one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so and I was just so in tune with myself. I had done the work, and then I surfed that whole day and got some, you know, like just got the best waves of my life, you know. And
absolute perfection from a surfer's life.
12, 15 foot, just green, blue tubes that I could have drove a truck through.
Can I just ask... when you talk about going back and the yoga and, you know, finding that zen within yourself, I guess, and that stopping and breathing.
Yes.
You didn't do that with Code Red.
No.
You went out there with adrenaline pumping and zero fucks given.
Yes.
Yet, you're a man now that's had, as you said, was a couple of years gap.
Yep.
You've gone and really sort of found you.
Yep.
Came out there with a conscious thought. Yep. Am I right saying that? That there was a plan in your mind prior to just going out there and visualizing, and rather than just say, fucking here, Cobes, we're on, let's go. And everybody going, whoa, Dingy, just, man, this time, different man.
Yeah, totally different. And, you know, I had the best 5 days surf of my life. The next day, it was still 15 feet bigger. And there was no one out because everyone had been so surfed out. And then, it was amazing. I just had this euphoric feeling. And I just went, wow, that, you know, I felt like I had gone from a situation that really scared me and I wasn't ready for that. I had done it. And then I had another opportunity where I'd done the preparation. And then I was fine in any situation I was going to find myself in during that swell.
Did you paddle any of those waves?
Yeah, we paddled in the mornings. In that morning, that, because it come up really quick. So I paddled in the morning and got some really good waves. And then I just jumped on the right when I could because it's pretty crowded. But, it was the best surfing I had done up to that point. And I was just, you know, I had done the preparation. And I found myself in a situation where I didn't make a wave and I got sucked into the right.
To the right?
Yeah. And it was like, it was dry reef and it was like probably...
Fuck me.
You know, it was...
Was that like, yeah, hell, there's the fire burning?
I was like, okay. And, you know, I was able to surrender in that situation rather than panic.
Really, and allow your body to just be taken by the ocean and just...
And I was going over these crevices like this and just getting sucked into a 15, 20-foot wave. And just, but just as fast as you could. And I was like, okay, I just let go. And I,
did you at that point just realize you there was not a thing you're going to be able
there
to
do? There was not one thing I could do in that situation. I was like, it's out of my hands.
Like, I get, if that had been the case the couple of years prior, and, you know, God forbid, but it had gone bad.
Yep.
You wouldn't have had this mindset anyway at that time, would you? You would have just been probably... I'm gone.
Yeah.
Out on my own terms, fuck the world, and here I am, bang, on the reef, gone. But he's a man who's gone and done some really deep soul-searching and found some beautiful peace within himself, who is loving himself again.
Yeah.
And you're confronted with that situation.
Yeah. So,
did you come out of it okay?
Yeah, perfect.
So, no injury whatsoever?
Yeah, a little cut on my foot, and, you know, that was
wow.
It. So it was just, I was in, you know, I had done the preparation, like, well, you know, it comes back to, you know, the conversation that I had with Lockyer, you know, it was just that.
Absolutely.
You know, you do the preparation, you find yourself in them hard moments, then you can, you know, you've done the work and you can surrender to it.
That wasn't your only experience, was it, in the big wave sort of stage? You then took it to a whole new venue and a whole new level and,
yeah,
mate, that wave... Was it WA?
Yeah, that was WA. I was just in a good space. I about a week out, you start preparing for it and you start ticking the boxes. Okay, am I prepared for something to go wrong? Yes.
And just for the listeners, can you give a little bit of description about what we're talking about here?
Yeah, so you see these swells. So what happens is a swell hits the bottom of Africa and then spins across. So it was one of the biggest swells we had seen in a long, long time. And, you get the phone call of Hippo or Marky and, you know, it's on, like, how you're feeling.
Mark Matthews and Ron Hipwood, two amazing surfers of all.
Yeah. Yep. So, like, and then I start checking in with myself. Okay, how am I, you know, am I prepared for this because of the situation that I had been in Tahiti? I was never going to put myself in that predicament again.
So you've made that honest, conscious decision.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
You lived, you survived.
Yeah.
There's only up from here.
Yeah. Okay, how do I feel? All right, I'm feeling that, you know, there's something I need to go to here.
Okay, so you were drawn to it?
Yeah, I was drawn to it. And, all right, well, let's go. I don't know what it is, but it's making me really nervous. And,
Is that a good thing, though, for Dean Morrison? You know, living and have travelled and experienced what you've experienced. I mean, you can't tell me that you haven't had butterflies in, you know, some of the most craziest places you've been.
Mm.
But you're already feeling this energy within yourself. Was it that fear again?
It was.
Of, you know, what may be?
No, it wasn't fear. It was like, I guess fear pops up like eventually because over a week, you know, your mind starts coming up with
it's
all
like
kinds
leading
of
up to a fight.
Yeah,
you know, you're getting that at last, then you start to question things, look at things.
But you know that it's what you want to face in that moment, and that's why you're doing it.
And the work you've put in to get you there.
Exactly. So, you know, we rock up, you know, and it's always the same as when we're rocking up to places like that, you know, people are kind of evacuating because, you know, the storm's so big.
Oh, in the location, coastal location.
In the location, yeah.
Because I don't know, I haven't been there, but from what I've seen, it's a journey, isn't it, to get out there?
Yeah, it is a journey, you know, it's a...
It's not just get off a plane and jump on a jet ski.
No, it's, you know, you've it's 5 hours from the airport and, you know, Bradley Norris picked me up from the airport and, you know, we said, okay, we're going to be tow partners, let's do it. And so, we went down there and, you know, it's just that anticipation and that, oh, what can happen? And then you're hearing, you know, everyone's checking the buoys and the buoys are...
Do you guys get into some really deep conversation about where you're both heading and get yourselves on a very similar mindset? And, like, do you sort of keep each other really motivated for what's ahead?
For me, I'm just going inwards. You know, I'm just preparing myself to be in situations that are going to be really uncomfortable.
So does that mean Dean sort of starts to get a little bit quiet?
Yeah,
chilled?
I get quiet. I go inward.
Yep.
And I'm just like, okay, I'm not engaging too much in conversations. You know, it's just, okay, I'm here. I'm living in the moment and trying to get myself there to prepare for just having to be so on in a situation that I, you know, I'm responding rather than thinking. So, you know, it's you want to be out of your head and it's just, okay, and be okay with whatever's going to happen.
Yeah.
Whether good or bad. So
obviously death was something on the cards out there.
Always. Yeah. You know, and that's being, you know, okay with that. But being able to, you know, like enjoy the journey because if, you know, you just let go and surrender to it because if it's not going to happen there, then it's probably going to happen somewhere else.
You guys, it's not the first time I've heard that. You let go and you surrender. I'm sure many people listening could never fathom just being presented in the middle of the ocean because it is, isn't it? It's just a ledge in the middle of fucking nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah, so it
comes massively out of hugely deep water.
Yeah, like there's nothing that breaks up that energy between there and then it's hitting like a reef that's 20 foot deep.
So, in its good time.
Yeah, in its good time. You know.
In its good time.
But once you're on the wave, you know, that it sucks out and, you know, it's
dry, isn't it?
But then there's a ledge over the other side that's 200 foot deep. So that's whenever anyone falls off, you get sucked down so deep and you're under, you know, you're guaranteed you're on for two waves. People have been on for three waves down there.
So you need to be able to be calm, as you said,
surrender.
That's a lot of breath work. Isn't it? A lot of training?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of, you know, I've been in situations with guys that are smoking cigarettes before they go out when it's huge. And it's about being relaxed more than holding your breath.
Oh, I couldn't. How?
Yeah.
How can you waste that oxygen in your lung when your lungs are going to go...
Yeah, I don't know, but it's...
Wow.
You know, it's being relaxed as you can in them situations.
Like, I've heard some, and we won't say names, but there's some amazing athletes out there in times that'll have a big fat line too before they get out there and be coked off their heads and, you know, next minute charge, the biggest fucking wave with a big smile. Like, you just go...
Yeah.
Your mind is such a powerful thing, isn't it?
It's the most powerful, for sure. You know.
And I think, you know, learning to understand that is where life begins.
Yeah, and that's, you know, for me, understanding that's where the battle begins.
It is a battle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Every day is a battle, eh?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's, you can, you know, you can choose love and surrendering and God, whatever you want to call it, or you can choose fear, hate, jealousy, all this stuff. And that's a choice we have within that mind.
How big was the wave? And I want to talk about the wave in particular that, you know, was captured. I know there was a few, but...
Yeah, it was big. But, you know, when you're in them situations, you're trying to play it down, you know. Like, I'll bring it back to having the conversation with Darren Lockyer. You know, it's just another game. It's just another day. You know, it's just for me that day, it was just another wave, you know, because...
When you look over that edge, butt, Dean...
Yeah.
It's life or death. If you don't make that fucking drop or you don't pull in at the right... I mean, there's a step there too, isn't there?
Yeah. And so, that, you know, all them situations, you know, that's what you want to stay away from, your analytical mind. You want to be
so that's what I'm getting at. They're not things that are in your mind.
No. And at that moment. And that's why leading up to a swell like that, that no one's short of a story about how gnarly this wave is, about when old mate got chairlifted out of there, when he got three wave hold down, when he broke his eardrums, when old mate died that day. Yep. Like, there's all these stories come up. So that's why I go inward.
Yes. You know, I'm not, just shut it all out.
Yeah, you just, whatever. You know, it's just like, you know, that's... I'm here to do the very best I can and face a fear that, you know, I've done this since I was young. You know,
was it scary, bud? Like, I mean, you say, you know, that fear, and fear is an energy that can be used for such positive.
Yes, yes.
And obviously you mastered that.
Yep.
Because to take what you guys have done and what you've experienced, like talk about Tahiti, I mean... Man, you've got to have that fear within you. Like, I know jumping over the ropes for a fight, I'm not scared of my opponent, but there's fear in there, and that's what keeps me ready. You know, yes. I'm adrenaline. I'm ready to go. I'm here, and I'm pumped for it.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same. Like, it's just that awareness of being in the moment, of that fear of using it to your advantage, of being able to be the very best you can in that moment. And it's beyond thought, you know. It's a preparation that you've done before you go into the ropes. It's a preparation that you've done that gets you through them.
Is this
moments.
How Dean Morrison is living Dean Morrison's life today? As a dad, as a man, as a leader and someone who now is giving so much back to others and bringing people joy through the work that you're doing, you know. Yeah. And are you living by these thoughts?
Yeah, I realize that I can live my life in love and light, and you know, and connect to a godly energy, and or you can go down the road of playing victim and hating everybody. You know, that's a choice that we have. And you know,
do you believe you hit rock bottom?
Yes, I believe that I got on my knees once, and and I prayed.
Yep.
And you know, you kind of have to hit rock bottom to get to that point.
Today, Dean Morrison, who is he? What's he doing? Because I tell you, there's a lot of things going on, isn't there?
Yeah.
They're all good.
Yeah, it's unreal, and it's just, you know, living my life in love, and in God, and connecting with that energy of absolute love.
I've watched you. I know we know the same people. There's things we've come in contact with. Like, you have always been someone I've just gone, man. And same with Joel. Mm-hmm. Like, for me personally, just the two of you guys are just Buddhas. You know, like there's an energy, right. There's a zen, and I love it. And knowing a lot of what was going on with you without being in contact with you, I was aware of the rehab. I was aware of you really... in some fucked up places, needing to come back to where you are today.
Yep.
And then there's this beautiful little fella.
Yeah.
Ike. Yeah. Can I speak of his
name?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm constantly inspired at the dad that you are. And I always strive to be a better dad. You know, my children are 21, 13, 10 and 6. And I'm just a learning dad. I didn't have a dad. You know, I was an abused child. I didn't know what the fuck I was. I blew it with my oldest son, which is now good. You've been an amazing inspiration to so many by just being a dad.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. And yeah, it's that's why I do everything. That's why I look at myself honestly to make sure that, you know, what I'm passing on is all positive to him. So he doesn't have the baggage that I went through.
Man, it's just beautiful. Yeah. Like, what you're teaching him, you know, and it's like, he's beside you everywhere and your energies are reflecting on him. Like, you know, you see him with the boxing gloves on in your little stories, yeah, and I know you love your boxing. You're down there with Angelo Hyder and the boys. And, you know, I've been seeing it for the last couple of years because you've been kind enough to show the world, you know, the little things. And I can only imagine how amazing it is there, you know.
Yeah.
He just froths off you.
Yeah.
It's your love, your kindness, your energy, your support, your presence.
Yeah, yeah.
You being a dad.
Yeah. And
that you didn't have.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Like, he copies what I do.
Oh, I can see. That's so cool.
I try to tell him something. And he looks at me like, no, we don't do it that way. But as soon as I, you know, as soon as I do it, he's, you know, he copies me. You know, me and his mother, we share joint custody.
And that's okay. Things are okay. It works all right for you both.
He's loved. And
that's what he needs to know.
And that's what he needs to know.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And so everything else...
It's irrelevant.
As long as he's got a smile on his face.
And smile?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He has the biggest smile, biggest pearly whites.
Yeah.
And for everyone out there, you're Māori.
Yeah.
So Dean's actually, if you don't know Dean's got some wonderful olive skin and, you know, he's a Kiwi boy.
Yeah.
And Ikey's just... He's like this little. He reminds me of Foot Rot Flats, Rangy.
Yeah.
Barefoot, cruising around, biggest smile, footy under his arm, and not a care in the world.
Nah.
What a great way to raise a son or any child, a daughter. You know, like what a beautiful life you're giving.
Yeah, thank you for noticing that.
Oh, mate, I look. Yeah. You know, I drop little comments because I've made a lot of mistakes as a dad. You know, and I'm learned from them, and I'm learning from them, and I'm a greater dad than I ever was.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still like to be a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, and when I see actions of other men that I know that I look up to and that inspire me, it's very powerful. So I thank you for that, you know.
Yeah.
You're also, too, helping people find I don't know what you want to call it, but I could see some big smiles as well through learning to surf and putting them in... Mm-hmm. The wave of a lifetime.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's...
To fill us in on that and the business and what you're doing there.
Yeah, well, that's my passion. And, you know, what I have to share with people is what I've learned. And, you know, surfing you know, that's been my main focus, you know, since I was, you know, still in single digits, you know, 7, 8 years old. So, you know, and it's such a beautiful thing when I can... put people in a position and get them that stoke of the wave of a lifetime.
The stoke, my goodness. You see the footage on it. And for anybody out there, jump onto Instagram to Dingo Morrison and have a look. And then the wave of a lifetime also, that has it all there. And some of the people that you just look at, and I look and I think, I could be that person.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm just... fucking average Joe Blow, I paddle out, and if the wave comes and I get it, I ride it well. I'm okay with it. I'm just an old bloke, fat guy, slow turns, but I enjoy it, you know, and I see blokes getting barreled from your direction and skills, and they're coming out, woo, and they wouldn't normally be getting that barrel.
Those
blows, because they're pretty much just average people, your main everyday people, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, and that's, I love sharing that gift, and to be around people when they're in that state, and it's, you know, that it's better than me getting a good wave. I'm like, wow, what? And then you see that, like when you get a good wave and you get tubed, like you don't know what's going on. You're like, what happened? Like feels like you go through a portal hole.
Okay. Dino, with all our guests, before we leave, we always like to leave on a powerful note, and I ask each person, what is a paragraph, a sentence, something that's given you inspiration to wake up every day and be the best man you can be?
For me, I just try to connect with God first thing I wake up in the morning.
So you found peace within religion as well?
Yeah, and whichever way you call God.
Yeah, you know? Beautiful.
And so for me, it's living your life in love and light.
Yep.
And so, you know, I try to connect with that and live my life throughout the day with, you know, connecting with God.
Dee Morrison, I want to say thank you again. You've come with a beautiful story. Mm. And I really believe it'll resonate with many people, and I feel very honoured to have sat here with you. And I guess I'm a little bit emotionally overwhelmed because there's so much that I've just realised we powerfully have just shared that, you know, it's not easy. It makes it very hard, and you've made yourself quite vulnerable. Oh, fuck, I don't usually get like that. But anyway, bro,
Yeah, brother.
Mate, just a hug. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I love you too, bro. And keep inspiring, keep being you, and keep us, mate, keep Ikey's smile brighter than ever. It's just beautiful. Yeah. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, brother.
There you have it, guys. Dean Morrison here today, live in studio with me on The Clink, Stories of Redemption. What a powerful story. It actually has brought a tear to my eye, and I hope that it resonates with many of you. Thank you very much. This is The Clink.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record.
Want to thank a new sponsor who's just come on board, Dr. Pickles Tattoo Aftercare and Lifestyle Products. They're made in Brisbane and are known right around the world. They have this amazing balm. It's called the Original Tattoo Balm. You seal and protect your tattoo with the OG. I've just been using it on my leg after I had it done, and I tell you now, my skin feels amazing and there's a great shine to it. They also have an antiseptic spray you can spray on and wipe over your tattoo to keep it nice and clean so you don't get any infections. They've got a 3-in-1 wash. It's all natural, smells great, packed full of peppermint, citrus, and wait for it, hemp oils. How good's that? Plus, they have a SPF 50 sunscreen, which acts as a moisturizer as well as protecting your tattoos from fading and stop them from getting sun damage. Right now, though, for the Clink listeners, they're offering 15% off with the code CLINK. Just head to drpickles.com. That's drpickles.com.